Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll trace the Red Bulls' route through World War II with a veteran who lived it, and we'll look to their future with their new commander. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
In January, our nation celebrates the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. You remember his speech from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial during the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. In that 1963 speech, Dr. King famously said, "I have a dream." Even more powerful than that iconic moment, Dr. King was a distinguished leader. He had the courage to act on his convictions. He challenged the nation to live out the true meaning of its creed, that all people are created equal and they have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Inspired by Dr. King, the Minnesota National Guard is committed to building and sustaining an organizational climate in which people of diverse backgrounds, cultures, races, and religions, and ethnicities are fully included, valued, and respected. The challenge in Minnesota will be met by Minnesota National Guard's diverse citizens, soldiers, and airmen.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Lyle Bonkrud. Mr. Bonkrud served in World War II in the European Theater. He joined the Minnesota National Guard in January 1941, and a month later, on February 10, 1941, his unit was activated for federal service. He became part of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. This was the first American Army unit sent to the European Theater during World War II. Lyle, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Can you tell us, World War II was a few days ago, how did you decide to enlist in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, things were quite tough at that time. You guys don't remember it, but it was pretty hard going around the area at that time. I was working out in St. Paul for 60 cents an hour, and so I thought it might be better to get into the service. And I thought maybe the service needed somebody.
And so you chose the Minnesota National Guard.
That's right.
At the time, did you think that was going to be a way to stay home?
I thought it would be a nice time to go south for the winter.
And shortly after you joined the Minnesota National Guard, we went to war, didn't we?
That's right. It wasn't long.
And where were you sent first, Lyle?
Was sent to Belfast, North Ireland first, and then we did some training in the British Isles, and then we went down into North Africa.
And before you even went over to Ireland, you went down to Louisiana for a while, didn't you?
That's right.
That was for training purposes?
That's right.
And you were training with George Patton, or under George Patton, General Patton?
Yes, that's right. I remember one time I was picked for driving some of those people that were picking out the area for the maneuvers. And one of them was Colonel Fenton M. Woods from the 5th Army Headquarters.
So were they looking for a volunteer for a driver and you got volunteered?
Yeah, that's right.
And apparently you did a pretty good job of it.
Well, he asked for me again, so I guess it was all right.
So that started your military career as a driver all throughout World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you, your first, you were the 34th Infantry Division, was the first American unit that left the United States, is my understanding, and then you went to Northern Ireland. How did you like Northern Ireland?
I liked it, yeah.
The people over there didn't speak Norwegian, though, did they?
No, they didn't, but it was pretty nice over there, pretty country.
And you were over in Northern Ireland training?
We did some training in Scotland and England, too.
We're speaking with Lyle Bonkrud, who served in World War II in the European Theater with the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division on Minnesota Military Radio. Lyle, where was your next stop after pretty easy duty over in Northern Ireland? Where'd you go next?
Next, went over to Scotland for a while.
To train with the British?
Short time, yes.
How was your equipment when you arrived there?
Well, our equipment was quite poor. When we went overseas, we had World War I helmets and leggings and so forth. and all three rifles. But then we started getting a little better equipment, and our artillery took over. I got batteries from the British, so they were firing these 25-pounders, and artillery battalions were really sharp with them.
Well, Lyle, when you were in Scotland, were you still the commanding general's driver?
Yeah.
And was that General Hartley?
Ryder. General Ryder. Oh,
General Ryder at that time.
At that time, yeah.
So you got to see a lot of Scotland, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
And driving the general around, you were in the know, as they say.
Yeah.
Lyle, I understand your next stop was the unit was assigned to North Africa in November 1942.
That's right.
How was the 34th Infantry Division? Were they ready? Were they excited to go?
Well, we had some problems. We were ready to go, but we had problems there.
So we needed a little more training then?
My outfit landed in Algiers, and the French Vichy French were in command at that time, and the Germans, of course, but not very many Germans there.
So your unit was under the command of the French at that time?
Yeah.
How did that work?
Well, they opposed us for a while, but they finally gave in.
I'll bet General Ryder wasn't too happy about that.
No, he wasn't happy with them.
Not at all. So then off you went to North Africa in 1942. Now, I understand one day when you're over there during the battle for Hill 609, you met General George Patton.
That's right.
Can you tell us about that?
Well, General Patton wanted to get up to the front, so we escorted him up to, I'm quite sure it was Hill 609, and there was a soldier. I thought he was from the 133rd Infantry. It was coming down the hill side, not the back side, but the side of the hill. And General Patton said to him, "Soldier, let me see that rifle." "Yes, sir," he said, and he gave it to him. General Patton said, do you know as dirty as that rifle is? If you fired it, it would blow up and probably kill you." And the soldier said, "I don't believe so, sir. I just killed three Germans with it." And then General Patton said, "Good boy, get going."
Gave him back his rifle and said, "Keep up the good work."
Yeah.
Lyle, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your campaigns you were involved in. We're speaking with Lyle Bonkrud, who was a driver for the commanders of the 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls during World War II. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been joined today by Lyle Bonkrud, who was a driver for the several commanders of the 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls during World War II in the European theater. Lyle, when we left for a break, we were talking about you, and you were in North Africa, and then you were headed over towards Tunisia, and you told us a story about General Patton. But then after that, you had a break, and instead of driving for General Ryder, I understand you drove for General George Marshall for a bit.
I drove for him one day when he came over after the campaign was over in North Africa. And we were driving around the Jeep, and General Ryder had to sit back in that very uncomfortable seat in the back. And General Marshall patted me on the knee and wanted to know what I was doing with my money. He wanted me to send money home. He wanted all of us to send money home. But so, that was General George C. Marshall, and so next to the president.
Did you take his advice and send your money home?
Yeah, I started.
You did. But yeah. Before that, you were spending it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, right after that, Lyle, I understand that your unit invaded Italy in September 1943, landing at Salerno, and later hit the beach at Anzio. Can you tell us about Anzio?
They had sent fresh eggs up from Naples up there. Smuggled them up some way. We were going to have fresh eggs in the morning, but the Germans came over with fragmentation bombs, broke every egg that was right in the kitchen just below me. And I had to go outside and relieve myself, and the air was just hot as it could be out there. But another story I want to tell about Anzio is we had a lot of craters on the roads. One of the generals that came over was Cadet Commandant. I guess it was General Ryder.
Cadet Commandant.
Yeah.
But he had, he'd been in the service and he fought in World War One. And did he teach you a little trick about how to drive when you were being shelled?
Yes. You know, if you could drive through the woods, well, you're pretty safe because the German shelling wouldn't bother you much. But as soon as you got the opening, they'd open up on you. And so there was an opening we had to go through. And they started shelling, and General Ryder said, "You go up, turn around, go back, and I'll tell you when we should go." So we sat there. I had the motor running, and I came up a bunch of shells, and just at the tail end of the shelling, he said, "Let her go." And in we went, and we went through there, not a shell on us. He knew what he was doing.
So you waited until the first shells came in, and then you went fast.
Yeah.
And so you and he were safe.
Yeah.
Well, did he like to be up around the front lines?
After the next cell, we waited till it was about done, and that's when we went. Oh, yes, they were great for going front lines, both he and General Bolte. I forget which one of them was it said when we'd go up the front and someone would stick their head out of a foxhole and say, "No vehicles passed here in the daylight." And the general would say, "Well, I can go." So we went.
Well, the commanding general could go anywhere he wanted, couldn't he?
Yeah.
And you went with him.
We had one place, an escarpment, they called it. Every time we went over that place, they were shooting at us with 88s. One time, an 88 shell landed about as far as that wall is from us in front of the Jeep, but it never exploded.
That was lucky.
Well, General said, "It either gets you or they don't."
So Lyle, when you were driving the commanding generals around through Africa and Italy and so forth, did you get some pretty good chow? I understand you liked that.
Chow?
I understand you liked the kidney pudding and the mutton and the spam.
No. Not especially when we got attached to the British. The food was very poor.
So just because you were driving the general doesn't mean you got better chow than the rest of the guys.
No.
Lyle, I understand there was one time you took General Bolte he had to go to Paris.
Yeah.
And you drove him to the airport. What did you do while he was gone?
At the airport, he said to me, General Bolte said, "Now you learn the town while I'm gone." He had to fly to London for a meeting. I said, "Okay." And boy, I had a good time while he was gone. And when he came back, I picked him up at the airport, and he said, "Sergeant, do you know where this place is?" I said, "Yes, sir." And I took him there, and he was in there for a while. And he came out, "Do you know where this place is?" "Yes, sir." And so I took him there. Boy, he said, "You did get around while I was gone."
Did a reconnaissance of all of Paris, did you?
Yeah. He told me to get around, so I did.
So, Lyle, throughout all those campaigns from February of 1941 to November 1945, you drove for the commanding general of the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division, first General Ryder and then General Bolte. How long did you drive for General Bolte, and did you and he get along as well as you and General Ryder?
I got along fine with both of them. General Hartle was the first one I drove for, but I got along fine with all of them.
So all during World War II and the whole campaign of the 34th Infantry Division, you were driving the commanding generals around.
Yep.
So you were really in the know.
I don't think there was much time that I wasn't driving, not very much.
And towards the end of the war, when the troops wanted to come home, they had a point system to determine who could come home first.
Oh, yeah.
How did that work, and how many points did you have?
I had double amount of points that I needed to come home.
And I understand General Bolte wanted you to stay.
Yes, he did.
So what did you do?
Well, I decided I wanted to go home. I kicked myself afterwards. I should have stayed with him because he wanted me to stay. But
you'd been in the war for years, and it was time to go. Did you and General Bolte stay in touch after the war?
Oh, yes.
Became pretty good friends.
Very much so, yeah.
That's great. Lyle, how did you get home when you decided to come home? Did they transport you on a ship?
Yeah, yes.
And how'd you get along with the Navy guys there?
Oh, got along with them fine.
Did you have anything to say to them about the boat that you were on?
Well, we came home on an American ship. They had good, excellent food on the American ships.
It was just a little friendly rivalry between the soldiers and the Navy.
We didn't have any.
No? You weren't picking on them a little bit, telling them this was quite a boat instead of a ship?
Oh, I have to take that back. One remark, there were Marines. There were some Marines on this one ship, and they were walking out on the deck, and there was one staff sergeant who had been overseas as long as I have from one regiment, I forget which, and this one Marine. We was all dressed up in all like $1 million in a club and everything. And he's told the sergeant to move back from the deck. And the sergeant said, "Don't get smart with me. I'll take that mallet that he had." He says, "I'll take that mallet and I'll dump you over the side." And then that Marine walked off. He didn't say anything. But these guys had been through it.
Lyle, you were with the 34th Infantry Division from, as I said, February of 1941 to November 1945. And the 34th Infantry Division had more days of frontline combat than any other outfit in the war. And you were right there with the commanding generals. What would you have to say to our listeners about the job that the 34th Infantry Division did in World War II?
I think they did a good job. Fine job, I would say. We had such poor equipment to start with and everything. I did a tremendous job with what they had. I think the 151st Field Artillery Battalion saved the beachhead at Salerno. They fired point blank at the German Panzers coming down the road.
And you were there to see it all.
General Ryder was really upset there. That's the only time we ever used the siren on the vehicle.
Lyle, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners about your service in World War II?
Any final thoughts?
Yes, sir.
Just glad this was over and pretty well satisfied.
Lyle, I'd like to thank you for visiting with us today on Minnesota Military Radio, and thank you for your service in World War II.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
That was Lyle Bonkrud, a member of the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division in World War II on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll visit with the commander of the 34th Infantry Division on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the commanding general of the Minnesota's National Guard's 34th Infantry Red Bull Division. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleto.
In 1983, legislation was signed creating a federal holiday marking the birthday of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. In 1994, Congress designated the Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday as a national day of service and charged the Corporation for National and Community Service with leading this effort. This milestone is the perfect opportunity for Americans to honor Dr. King's legacy through service. Dr. King believed in a nation of freedom and justice for all and encouraged all citizens to live up to the purpose and potential of America by applying the principles of nonviolence to make this country a better place to live, creating a beloved community. I encourage you to volunteer your service and to move our nation closer to Dr. King's vision of that beloved community. Volunteer at a local nursing home, veterans home, the VA hospital, or organization of your choice to make that difference.
Thank you, Commissioner Schellido. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Commanding General of Minnesota National Guard's 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, Brigadier General Neil Leutholt. General, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me back, Tom. I really appreciate it.
General, since we've talked, you took over command of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, a legendary division. We've heard all about World War II in the first half of the show today. How does it feel to be the commander of that division?
I have to tell you, Tom, it's pretty exciting, but it's a bit humbling and somewhat scary at times. You know, it's always different when you actually get the job as opposed to when you're watching someone else do it, and to follow in the steps of great leaders like Major General Elisario and Major General Nash, and considering the storied history of the division, it certainly is a big of a challenge as I've ever experienced.
General, for our listeners that might not be familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about your career? How long have you been in the military?
I think I'm just a bit over 29 years now, Tom. I joined as an enlisted soldier in 1984 as an ammunition specialist. Got a commission at St. Cloud State. Spent my formative years in the field artillery and normal assignments like battery command. And then I took kind of a non-traditional path into our recruiting command and into personnel. I commanded our training regiment, completed a fellowship, a couple of tours in Iraq in there, and then an opportunity to be the assistant adjutant general for General Nash before this assignment.
Quite a career so far, sir.
So far, so good, Tom.
I think there's some good things in the future.
Well, I hope I can do good things the next 3 years in this assignment. And I've always said, and I tell subordinate leaders in leader development, do the best you can at the job you got now. And if you're supposed to move on, you'll be able to move on.
General, you sat in when we were talking to Technical Sergeant Lyle Bonkrude about his service in World War II, and he was the driver for the commanding generals of the 34th Infantry Division all throughout the war. Pretty inspirational story.
It's just incredible. You know, the division's history, Tom, is formed by the collective experience of its soldiers. And I can't help but think of what author Rick Atkinson wrote. And he said, the battle had affirmed once again that war is never linear, but rather a chaotic, destructive enterprise of reversal and advance, blunder and elan, despair and elation. Yet, as always, even as armies and army groups collide, it is the fates of individual soldiers that drew the eye. What a great opportunity for us to be able to visit with an individual soldier from World War II who accomplished so much himself as part of a greater enterprise.
And in any war, and especially in World War II, it's out there watching out for your buddies and accomplishing your mission, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's one of the things that that we know primarily drives individuals to serve. It's this sense of being able to sacrifice, to contribute to a larger cause, and to be prepared and trained to look out for the soldier or airman to your left and right.
General, I thought it was interesting that a Minnesota National Guard division was the first one to go to war and to be in combat more days than any other unit. Once again, and we're looking back now, 34th Infantry Red Bull Division has done some terrific things, and now you're the boss. That's quite a legacy to stand up to, isn't it?
It is, but it's a great organization. You know, that the 34th Infantry Division isn't its commander. It's a compilation of the soldiers and the units, the history and the experiences. And so while I'm fortunate enough to get to be called the commander at this particular point in time, in some respects, in a lot of respects, what I am is a member of a great team. And great teams continue on without respect to the particular leader at that time.
We're speaking with the commanding general of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, Brigadier General Neil Leutholt, on Minnesota Military Radio. General, this year, 2014, is the 70th anniversary of D-Day. And last year, we had the pleasure of interviewing General John W. Vesey, the 10th chairman of the Joint Chiefs, about a number of things. And one of the things he was talking about was the 34th Infantry Division in World War II. We've got a clip from General Vesey right now that I'd like to share with you.
We took Rome the day before D-Day, so the war in Italy had the headlines for about 12 hours, I think, in the United States at that time. And justifiably, the attack in Normandy took over the headlines the next day because it was the route to ultimate victory in Europe. But I would suggest that that campaign would have been a lot more difficult had we not pinned down 22 good German divisions in Italy.
General, I think of D-Day, I've never heard much about the 34th Infantry Division and his direct involvement in that, but as General Vesey told us, tying up 22 divisions from the enemy down in Italy, that had to be a crucial event in the success of D-Day.
Tom, you know, General Vesey, he's a national treasure. And his perspective in World War II as a sergeant and as a lieutenant, I think, was as prescient then as it is was during his tenure as the 10th chairman as it is now in retirement. 22 divisions otherwise tied up is a significant advantage for the Allied attacking forces at Normandy, primarily because it impacted on the enemies, on the Germans' ability to reinforce those organizations once our intentions became clear after the invasion force had landed.
And General, as Lyle Moncrew told us, the 34th Infantry Division was involved in, I think, a number of campaigns. Can you give us a little summary of everything that they did in World War II?
Tom, the division participated in six major army campaigns, North Africa, Sicily, and Italy. It's credited with amassing over 517 days of consecutive frontline combat, more than any other division. But for some, there was over 600 days of combat, depending upon what unit you might have found yourself assigned to at that time.
General, it occurs to me, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and when I went to Vietnam, I went for a specific tour of 13 months, and since September 11, 2001, we've had multiple deployments in the Minnesota National Guard, and you go off for a year, maybe 6 months, you go off for a specific amount of time, but in World War II, a world war, something that most of us have never been alive to see, the 34th Infantry Division left, and they went to war, and they weren't coming home until it was done. 517 days in continuous frontline combat. That, when you talk about battle fatigue, wow, those guys really went through a lot, didn't they?
They certainly did. And when you talk to them, you can hear almost in their stories the somewhat of a roller coaster ride that it is when you're in combat, especially for that length of time. You know, very intense periods where you're fearful for your life and you're not exactly sure how it's going to turn out, to some periods, as we heard Lyle describe, that were rather enjoyable to him and that didn't have him always directly involved. But when you contemplate the length of time some soldiers were gone, my dad's brother Rich spent 2.5 years in Europe in World War II. He wrote 5 letters home the entire time. I suspect that we have soldiers that are deployed now or have been deployed in the past that just really would have a difficult time trying to comprehend that lack of contact.
General, the other thing that I think's become clear to me in the 3 years or 3.5 years we've been doing this show is the American military has an ability, no matter whether we send them to the mountains or the desert or the jungles, when they've got a few days off, they have an ability to make themselves at home and find some creature comforts, don't they?
Well, you have to be able to rest, Tom. You have to sharpen that saw blade whenever you get a chance, because you don't know when the next time you go out might be for 25, 35, or 45 days. And so you take every opportunity that you can to police up your gear.
General, it must have really been something to go to war in World War II and know that you're not coming home till you're done. And well, you've got to salute that. I think they called them the greatest generation. They might have earned that title, don't you think?
I'm certain that they earned that title, Tom.
General, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division today and your new command there and what's in the future of the Minnesota National Guard's Red Bull soldiers. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking with the commanding general of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, Brigadier General Neil Loyholt. General, it was interesting to learn today some of the history of the 34th Infantry Division in World War II. And on this show, we've talked about the division off and on for the last few years. But since 9/11/2001, your division has had multiple deployments all over the world. And a lot of your soldiers have not only gone once, they've gone 2 times, 3 times, 4 times. We've got a volunteer force today. And they keep coming back, and they keep performing, and your readiness status is superb. How do you do all that, General?
I think it's the quality of our soldiers and airmen, Tom. They're just phenomenal. This is the best, most well-trained force that we've ever had. And I think our challenge going forward is not to lose that, because if we lose it, it'll be very difficult to get back. And so we need to be very precise with our focus on small unit and individual training to ensure that we maintain as much of that expertise, but also as much of that enthusiasm and camaraderie as we've been able to build over the last 12 years.
General, it would seem that in the past 10, 12 years, we've had all those deployments. And, of course, a couple of years ago, the Red Bulls came back, the 2,700 soldiers that were over in Kuwait helping with the drawdown from Iraq. And now, as General Nash told us a couple of weeks ago on our opening year show, the number of soldiers and airmen that are out is less than it's been in the past. Are we in a transition? The war in Iraq is over. The war in Afghanistan is supposed to be done the end of this year. Are you still preparing for deployments? Is anything transitioning or changing?
I think it's fair to say we're in a transition, Tom, but I don't much focus on the fact that it's war or not war. It's the relative level of readiness that I think we can achieve. And so while we might not be training brigade combat teams like the 1st Brigade that you know so well to go to war, we still have to have individual soldiers and airmen who are ready. We have to have small units that are ready. And so as we face this time of austere resources, what we'll do is we'll try to make sure that we can push the readiness to the lowest level possible of the force and still make good on our commitment to produce trained and ready units for the federal mission, the warfight, the state mission, which is the domestic operations and protection of our citizens, and what we refer to as our local or community mission in our 63 armories and community centers throughout the state.
So you really have to be prepared, whether it's a national call to federal duty and be deployed, or if the governor calls and says, "We've got flooding up in North Dakota. Let's get to business. Let's get to work and get and help."
Yes, in fact, and sometimes that's little known that we train on the same set of tasks for either of those missions. It just the difference is where we're sent to do them, under whose command. As you know, if we participate in a state response, it's under the command of the governor, and the type of task we do when we get there.
General, it would seem that with things kind of slowing down, keeping all your soldiers focused and doing what we've heard so often is training, training, training. You're training for all kinds of things, from sexual abuse to suicide prevention to fighting floods to deployed to Afghanistan. It's quite a challenge to keep everybody ready for that many different things, isn't it?
It is, Tom. It's a significant challenge for our junior leaders where the majority of that burden falls. But we know this. We like to be busy. Soldiers like to be busy. The number one reason soldiers leave our formation is because they get bored, or they're no longer challenged, or they can't find meaning in what they do. So occasionally to have a few more tasks on the list than you're able to get to during any particular period is actually a good thing.
We're speaking with Brigadier General Neil Leutholt on Minnesota Military Radio. General, I understand that sometime this year you've got a big training exercise coming up.
We are one of two National Guard divisions this year, Tom, that'll be able to participate in a division full spectrum operation. And what that allows us to do through a computer simulation is to exercise the division headquarters' ability to command and control subordinate units. It's the mission the division did in 2009 and 10 when it was in Basra and had control of the southern nine provinces of Iraq. And the mission that we'll take on this spring, summer will be a mission to see how well we can participate in full spectrum operations.
General, we talked earlier about your career, 29 years in the military. You've been in a lot of different positions. They seem to move officers from one command to another, and you get all of this experience. And has all of that, do you think, really prepared you to be the commander of this legendary division?
Well, Tom, I at the risk of sounding bold, I don't know that I'm fully prepared yet to be the division commander, but I would suggest to you that the way you described it is correct. You know, I've been a private, and now I'm a general. I've served at the top of the Army. I've served at the bottom of the Army. You know, I was in a job as important as being a chief of staff in war, and I've also been back here developing a plan to simply respond to floods. So yeah, I've seen the good and bad of the Army. I think I have a pretty fair feel for what it's up to and what it's about, and that's given me a level of patience and a perspective to hopefully to deal with complex problems. But at the end of the day, what I know about myself, Tom, is I love soldiers. I love the soldier, and so that's what will motivate me through this next challenging position.
In general, I would think it's a real honor to serve in the position as commanding general of the Red Bulls, but from what I've seen the last 3 years, you've got the greatest professional group of soldiers under you. Their attitude is tremendous. That has to make your job a lot easier.
It certainly does. I touched on that a bit before. You know, I believe the most honorable thing that a young man or woman can do is to serve their country. And we have an outstanding organization that allows them to do that. And my message to the citizenry here is your forces are well prepared, but we need your support. We thank you for your support in the past, but we'll need your support in the future as well in order to ensure our forces stay as prepared as possible.
General, one last question. What would you say to our listeners if some of them were thinking about a career in the Minnesota National Guard and becoming a Red Bull soldier?
I would say I welcome you to our formation. You can look us up on the web. You can go to any of our locations and contact a recruiter. But this truly is an honorable profession, Tom, and we have room. We will always have room for good soldiers and airmen in Minnesota.
Lots of great opportunities to change their lives and grow up and learn something that they can put to work for the rest of their lives, isn't it?
In fact, that's true, Tom. I tell the folks on my staff, if someone like me from Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, can be the commanding general of the 34th Infantry Division, then you can do anything by enlisting in the Army or Air National Guard.
General, we just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I just want to say thanks again to the listeners, to the audience, to those stations that so proudly carry your show, Tom, and to you for your volunteer work here to promote the interests of our citizen soldiers in Minnesota.
My pleasure, sir. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
That was the commanding general of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Infantry Red Bull Division, Brigadier General Neil Leutholt. Joining me now is Scott County's Veteran Service Officer, Todd Kubinski. Todd, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning. How are you?
We're doing great. What's new in the world of county veteran service officers?
Oh, well, we have one major issue that we're keeping an eye on, and I know that the American Legion and the VFW and the DAV are keeping an eye on, too. The Veterans Administration, they're saying with an effort to try to streamline and clear up their backlog, have talked about publishing a rule that they will no longer accept informal claims. Now, briefly, what that means is that any veteran, when they're filing a claim up until this point, could do it on a piece of paper, sign their name to it, say, I would like to file a claim for compensation. At that point, that's the effective date of claim. What the VA's new proposal is that this effective date of claim will not happen until a completed application for benefits has been submitted. In effect, if a veteran is not computer savvy and do the e-benefits thing for the application, they could lose out on possibly thousands of dollars by not having that effective date established prior to them getting all their paperwork together for their claim.
So the important thing to know is if there's a problem or a claim they want to make, get started, and you do that by going to see your county veteran service officer.
Right, that is always the best way. Even with e-benefits, it's still not a vehicle where you have someone to advocate for you. All you're doing is filling out a form. You come in to see us, we know exactly what needs to be in those applications for your compensation. We know what kind of evidence the VA is going to be looking for, and we'll tell you how to even word opinion letters so that doctors can make a strong case for service connection. We're the experts in this matter. We will help you get that done, and we will make sure that you have a complete application going in. So if this new rule does come into effect, we'll be able to make sure that your effective date of claim is fair.
Todd, we had on a World War II veteran today, and we had a current day service member on. What would you have to say to all of our veterans, regardless of when they served?
For every veteran, you need to get in to see your county veteran service officer. We are the ones that know everything there is to know about getting those claims filed. And if we don't know the answer, we know where to find it. We have partners all over the state and all over the country that can help you get the benefits that you're entitled to.
So for all our listeners out there that are veterans, go get your DD-214 and go visit your county veteran service officer. You may not need them today, but you might someday and your family might someday. Todd, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
This is Todd Kubinski, the Scott County Veteran Service Officer on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Lyle Bonkrud, Brigadier General Neil Leutholt, Todd Kubinski, Commissioner Larry Shelito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we visit with our state Vietnam veterans and we'll meet the few, the proud Minnesota Marines. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.